Guns and laws are the topic on this Hour of the Exchange, with an emphasis on bills submitted for consideration to the current session of the Oregon legislature. There's quite a pile there, with dozens of bills dealing with guns introduced. We heard from the pro-gun, anti-restriction side just a few moments ago with Kevin Starrett of the Oregon Firearms Federation. We now turn to the view from the other direction. Penny Okamoto is the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon. Penny, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here today. So you heard some of that, I know, because we had a chance to get you hooked up early. I'm curious to know about some of the things that Kevin Starrett was talking about specifically, like the address confidentiality problem he sees in Oregon now.
Sure. First of all, I want to make a few clarifications. Ceasefire Oregon does not oppose responsible gun ownership. So, you know, we kind of get, you know, some labels thrown at us, but the truth of the matter is that we don't oppose responsible gun ownership. So addressing the address confidentiality, there are several laws out there right now that handle this, and I don't know if you really discussed what the address confidentiality program is.
Not at length.
Okay, so basically it's just a substitute address that someone can use if they're a victim of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got several bills that will give exemptions to people if they actually are on this address confidentiality program. We understand that the bill sponsor, you know, wants to, you know, protect people who have been victims of domestic violence, and we applaud that. But there's one kind of big problem. The big problem is assuming that a gun is going to be the answer to, you know, everyone's problems, and that a gun is going to be, you know, an answer to a woman who is abused or stalked. And we know that's simply not the case. It would be far more effective to make sure that people who are domestic violence abusers and who are stalkers can't get guns. For example, SB 797, which was introduced this year, does several things. It closes the Charleston loophole, but it also closes the dating partner loophole. And this means that it would broaden the definition of domestic violence to include people who have not lived together before or don't have a family member common like a child. So if there has been dating and domestic abuse, but people haven't lived together, don't have a child together, doesn't fall under domestic violence, can't be considered a domestic violence misdemeanor, and therefore the abuser can still get a gun. SB 797 also covers stalking, so stalkers will no longer be able to have guns. So that's actually kind of a better way to go about it. And we're also taking a look at maybe ways of adding to the background check system the address confidentiality program list. Something that we could do.
Let's expand on the Charleston loophole, because we mentioned it in passing twice now. But essentially what happened in Dylan Roof's case was the information wasn't complete, so his background check didn't complete within a time window. And once the time window expired, he got the gun.
Right.
And was able to kill the people in the church in Charleston.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so, which brings us to one of the points that Kevin Starrett made, which is that the system is clunky, inefficient, riddled with problems, et cetera, et cetera. I think you heard some of that part of it. But, I mean, what is the truth as far as you can see about the conduct, particularly in Oregon, of the background check system?
No, the background check system, I mean, very few people actually who have pending or have to wait longer than 3 days. It's very few. But here's kind of how Ceasefire Oregon looks at it. If, you know, so after 3 business days, the gun seller has the right to sell the gun. Some places will not sell the gun without a completed background check. My understanding is that Walmart won't sell a gun without a completed background check. So, but one of the ways Ceasefire Oregon looks at it is this. Okay, you want to go ahead and sell that gun without a completed background check? Let's take away immunity. So right now what happens is that if the seller attempts a background check, background check takes longer than 3 days, seller goes ahead and sells the gun anyway, and the person is, you know, is a prohibited purchaser, nothing happens to the gun seller, completely walks away from it. I guess that's what happened actually in the case with Dylan Roof, the Charleston AME church shooting. The gun seller was not at all held liable. So we look at it this way. If that gun seller is so convinced that that gun buyer is not a prohibited purchaser, if that gun seller is willing to bet everyone else's life that that person is not prohibited, then that person should be able to, or should be willing to bet his or her own freedom. So they should remove immunity.
And at this point, it is the option of the store, though, because when you say that Walmart doesn't do this, that makes it sound like it is the option of the store at this point.
Oh, yeah. Stores don't have to sell this. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. They can walk away, and some stores will. So when I hear these stories about people who have their, you know, rights denied for 6 months, 2 months, whatever, years, I'm thinking, well, why don't they go someplace else? And if another place is denying them, is saying, no, we're not going to, you know, sell you, you know, a gun after 3 days, you know, you got to ask, why are so many people, why are so many gun sellers, I should say, not willing to sell a person a gun? So a gun seller actually has, you know, they have some leeway. They can, someone comes in, wants to, you know, buy a gun, and they think the person's suicidal, or they have concerns about the person, and the person, you know, if the person could be dangerous to sell for others. The gun seller is not required by law to sell that gun.
Let's take a call here. We have Byron, who's been waiting since Kevin Starrett was on the line. Byron from Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking guns with Penny Okamoto at Ceasefire Oregon.
Thank you. Yeah, important topic. Lots of detail. Kind of confusing, it seems, but when I look at the Second Amendment, I wonder whether the people who claim that we all have a right to have a gun, no matter the circumstances, no matter the danger to the rest of the society around us, whether they have looked at all or believe that the words, a well-regulated militia being necessary, are in the Second Amendment. Those words are there, and I know there have been Supreme Court cases to say that, well, they don't really matter as much, but I think they do matter. And the whole purpose is to create a well-regulated militia, not a bunch of yahoos with their guns doing it whenever they want. So I know that's a vague comment, but I think we should affirm that part of the Second Amendment as well as the rest of it.
All right, Byron, thanks for that. Appreciate that. Penny, how much does it get mentioned that there is the other 13 words in addition to the 14 that most people focus on in the Second Amendment?
Well, it was mentioned pretty constantly until the Heller and McDonald decisions, which is what Byron's referring to.
Mm-hmm. Which affirmed an individual right to gun ownership in America.
Right. It affirmed the right to have a gun in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. But also, you know, there were a lot of, there was an entire section of, not caveats, but actually Justice Scalia wrote kind of this whole section about it doesn't mean that the right is absolute. It doesn't mean that someone has the right to have any type of gun anywhere and just everyone can have them. It also reaffirms the rights that the states and the federal government can actually have background checks. We can make sure that people who are not people who are prohibited from purchasing or possessing guns don't have them.
I just wonder if the individual gun ownership right identified by the Heller and McDonald decisions and by Justice Scalia's comments in particular, if they've put additional pressure on the likes of Ceasefire Oregon to make sure they write laws carefully or design legislation carefully to fit within that now fully carved out individual right for gun ownership in the home.
So I think what you're saying is, do the laws we champion fit within the scope of the Second Amendment?
Well, if it's just that much trickier to write them now and to look for places you can place some restrictions within the context of the individual gun ownership right.
Oh, no, actually it's easier.
Oh.
Because we know that it doesn't mean, we know it's not an absolute right. You know, people, you know, aren't allowed to have guns in certain places, in restricted places. And, you know, in schools, I don't know if people know, but in the state of Oregon, people with a concealed handgun license can actually have a gun in a public school, K-12. So I would really like to address this kind of myth of the concealed handgun license as well, because in the state of Oregon, that state law does not require that a person even touch a gun to get a concealed handgun license. Now, a lot of counties will actually require people to have more training,
mm-hmm.
but it's not, you don't even have to touch a gun.
So is that sheriff's discretion whether to require additional training or not?
I don't think it's necessarily up to the sheriff. I think the county decides it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah,
But as far as state law goes, you're saying that they just don't have to have any exposure to a gun from either end or know anything about how to operate one to get that CCL?
No, you don't have to touch it at all. And again, now some people who have concealed handgun licenses, you know, take this extremely seriously, and they get a lot of training. But some states like Delaware require training. They require conflict de-escalation training. They require marksmanship training. Some of them even require live fire training. So that's the kind of level that, you know, we would like to see for concealed handgun licenses, you know, in the state of Oregon. And the truth of the matter is that even Texas has far more stringent concealed handgun license requirements than Oregon does, so much so that Texas would not recognize an Oregon concealed handgun license. They wouldn't accept it as valid. That's Texas.
Which you would assume would be much more of a gun-happy sort of place.
Right, and I think we have I think it's over now, 250,000 concealed handgun license holders in the state of Oregon.
250,000, a quarter of a million people, which is what, 1/16 of the state's population, okay, with concealed carry licenses. What kind of training do you think is appropriate either for concealed carry permits or just in general? I mean, do you favor any kind of training either how to use a gun or gun aversion? I mean, for kids to get away from guns. How much of that stuff is already written into law, if anything, at this point?
Well, there's no training required just to purchase a gun. There's none. There's no training, no education. I mean, just to have a gun, concealed handgun license. Like I said, that there's, you have to take a course, but again, you're not required to touch a gun. Again, some counties do have people do that. They will make people do some firing beforehand. But what we would like to see is definitely conflict de-escalation. So you go into a situation, you see a situation perhaps, and you want to intervene, or perhaps someone's starting to harass you, just ways that you can intervene without pulling out your gun first thing that you do. So conflict de-escalation, definitely. Safe storage, secure storage. You know, some people say, I don't feel safe unless I've got my gun on, you know, available at all times. Great. You feel that way, you feel threatened. Okay, fine, but keep it secure on your person, in a holster, however you choose to keep it, but keep it secure. And too many people leave their firearms loaded and available where minors can access them. And that's one of the bills we're really championing, actually, is HB 2130, which is child access prevention. And basically it holds a gun owner liable if a minor accesses an unsecured gun. Now, this doesn't include people who, you know, someone breaks into their house, a 16-year-old breaks into the house and steals a gun. That's not included. This is really to help prevent cases of people who, like in the Oregon City shooting a few years ago, left the gun, went hunting one day, left the gun loaded, you know, in the living room of the house. The neighborhood boy came over the next day and was shot by the hunter's son. The gun owner, as far as I know, never faced any criminal charges. So, one thing people say is, well, if someone, you know, let's say a teenager has committed suicide or whatever, hasn't the family suffered enough? This is really about two things. One, it's about justice for the rest of the family. And two, it's about education and making sure people understand they've got to keep their firearms secured. And why do we have to have a law like that? You know, I ask myself that too. For example, when children's car seats first started being used, eventually laws had to be enacted to make people put their kids in car seats. Why? I don't know why people had to have a law to make them do that, but that's what happened. And now, of course, we see a great reduction, actually, in the injury and mortality rates of kids from car accidents.
Penny Okamoto is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon. We're talking about the pile of bills the legislature in Oregon is considering on gun laws. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. HB 2130, you were just talking about, creates crime of endangering a minor by allowing access to a firearm. What is the penalty that contains?
So the penalty, they start out as misdemeanors. And it depends on where the child has taken the gun, basically. But if, you know, worst case scenario, a minor is going to be anyone under the age of 18, the minor takes the gun and shoots someone and kills someone. It's unclear to me if it's just a grave injury or shooting someone at all. the felony is, excuse me, the penalty is actually a felony. And the reason it's a felony is because studies including bank by Daniel Webster from Johns Hopkins show that states that have felonies as a penalty have more success at having people follow the law.
Well, there's another one, too, though, HB 2523 relating to the storage of firearms for safety, which I see you on record as supporting. How does that differ from the other one?
So 2523, I'm actually going to bring this up here so because we can see it just a little bit differently. 2523, it actually authorized gun dealers to accept firearms surrendered for safekeeping. Mm-hmm. So the child access prevention basically states if you know there are going to be minors in your household, mm-hmm. you know, if you live with minors, things like that, you need to keep your weapons secured. Well, it doesn't say you need to keep your weapons secured. What it actually says is that if a minor accesses an unsecured weapon, the gun owner can be held criminally liable. So 2523, that's what you're talking about, right? 2523, safekeeping of firearms?
Right.
Right. That one simply states that...
this is the one you can give it to a gun dealer for safekeeping when circumstances right. are such?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that's, yeah, so it's different. And by the way, the state of Oregon has a preemption law regarding guns, and one of the things that municipalities cannot do is make laws regulating the storage of firearms. So that's why this isn't a law stating that people must keep their firearms securely stored, but rather if you don't keep it securely stored in certain circumstances, the gun owner can be held liable.
I'm looking also at one of the other things that Ceasefire Oregon is on record as supporting. That's House Bill 2526. Gun sellers must provide educational materials. And
sure.
I see that it directs the Department of Justice to establish firearm safety and suicide prevention education program.
Yeah, and thanks so much for bringing up suicide prevention. It's really important for people to know that in the state of Oregon, at least one person shoots himself or herself to death every single day. You know, and so that's just suicide by gun. That's not all suicide. The rate of suicide in Oregon is really horrific. Males between the ages of, like, say, 18 to 24, you know, the young males, they tend to commit suicide with guns. Males actually 65 and older, the real problem with gun suicide. And then, of course, veterans. Veterans are just horrific. Statistics about suicide, and especially, you know, it's very common. They often usually use a gun to commit suicide. So I just wanted, and I don't want to bog people down with statistics, but just to give people some ideas of numbers. Like in Chicago, for example, the rate of gun homicide. Now that's Chicago gun homicide. Okay, we all know that's pretty high. It's not the highest that people say, but it's pretty high. That's about 16 per 100,000. Okay, so just get an idea of that type of gunshot death, okay? In Multnomah County, Washington County, the gun suicide rate is around 6.1, 6.6 per 100,000, okay? That's gun suicide rate. Mm-hmm. In some of the rural counties, the gun suicide rate is 15, 16, and 17 per 100,000.
Wait, so you're talking about 6% in some places and upwards of 16 in other places?
Not 6%, 6 per 100,000.
6 per 100,000, okay.
Right. But then, yeah, and so in some of the Oregon, other rural Oregon counties, it is the gun suicide rate is at 15, 16, 17 per 100,000. So it's over twice of what you would see, you know, in Multnomah or Washington County. So it's the gun suicide rate in rural counties is horrific, and it's truly not being well addressed.
Penny, I want to ask you the same general question, though, that I asked Kevin Starrett, though, about where a gun is appropriate. I mean, it seems like by law, I mean, you can have one in your home with some restrictions. Beyond that, I mean, does Ceasefire Oregon take a position on whether guns should ever be outside the home or outside of the hunting range or shooting range?
We haven't taken an actual position on that. We certainly... we don't oppose people who are hunting. We don't oppose shooting ranges and, you know, things like that, you know, by any means. We don't believe that they should be in schools. It's just not an appropriate place. We don't think that teachers should have guns. I remind people that at the Columbine shooting. There were actually two officers, armed officers, at Columbine before the shooting even began. They just happened to be there. So this kind of, you know, it's so extremely rare that that something is going to be stopped or even prevented. Let's face it. I mean, if a lot of people having guns prevented crime, America would be the safest place in the world. You know, America has 300. We have 310 million guns. We have a gun for every man, woman, and child. I mean, so if more guns meant less crime, we'd be this, you know, crime-free haven.
Because I was just looking this up, too, and it seems like one in three Americans owns a gun, but the actual numbers of guns you're saying is roughly equal to the population?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we know that gun ownership is also often measured in terms of gun-owning households.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that fewer and fewer households own guns, or households have guns within them, but those households tend to have more and more guns.
Oh, interesting. So the number of households is dropping, but the number of guns increasing, and certainly by household.
Wow. Right. So people are going to have, you know, not just one gun, but maybe, you know, 5, 10, you know, they're going to have more guns.
So I keep coming back to what I see at the website for the Oregon Firearms Federation, where Oregon is controlled by rights-hating leftists. Do you feel like a rights-hating leftist most days?
You know, it's much easier to, you know, call so many names than really to deal with facts and issues. I think we've got our plan on our website, and it's actually a great plan to reduce gun violence. We think we can reduce gun violence by 30% to 50% by some pretty easy steps, and actually steps that are really well supported. This is going to be increasing. I'm sorry, I hear the music going. So
that's okay. You got less than a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, all right, got less than a minute. Okay, so we want to require higher standards for gun ownership, enhance the accountability of federally licensed firearms dealers, and improve safety standards for guns and gun ownership. And so, that's on our website and very well detailed there.
All right. Penny Okamoto is the executive director at Ceasefire Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us in this hour. I want to thank Kevin Starrett from the Oregon Firearms Federation for joining us. Previous to that, good discussion today, and thanks again.
Real pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.